Hey, American Hauntings listeners, it's Troy. Don't have enough American Hauntings in your life? Yeah, me either. But in your case, you're not chained to your desk being forced to create content for Cody. You get to listen to all this by choice. So why not check out our other podcast? As a Patreon supporter, you can get a new alternative podcast episode every week. And right now, we're in the middle of our third season, Sinister, the true story of H.H. Holmes. You know, that guy. The serial killer, the guy who built the murder castle, and the devil in the 1893 World's Fair in Chicago. Every episode delves deep into Holmes's most devious crimes and depraved murders. So check it out. Get that new episode every week and be a part of American Hauntings by becoming a Patreon supporter and subscribing now at patreon.com/AmericanHauntings. Okay, go ahead. Go do it. We'll wait. We'll be right here when you get back. And when you do, we'll get on with the show. Do you ever think about taking a vacation on a cruise ship? If you do, I mean, no one can blame you. They sound like a lot of fun and a luxurious way to knock a few locations off your world travel bucket list. Plus, they're filled with interesting people from all walks of life, all-you-can-eat buffets, all-you-can-drink bars and dance clubs, and every kind of off-the-boat activity you can imagine on tropical islands and in exotic cities. Booking passage on a cruise ship is like getting a ticket to paradise on the sea, right? Well, not always. Even if we leave out the seasickness, claustrophobic cabins, overflowing sewage, secret morgues, bedbug infestations, and failing grades from the Centers for Disease Control, I've got some things to tell you that may make you want to stay on land. The chances of a ship sinking are slim. But it's not an impossibility. And I'm not talking about Titanic in 1912 here. I'm talking about recently. Several dozen cruise ships have sunk since 1980. One of the worst was in 1994 when 800 people died on a ship that sank in the Baltic Sea. In 2012, a cruise ship hit some rocks off the Italian coast, partially sinking and killing 32 people. Its captain was later found guilty of manslaughter. What's more common than sinking is a ship getting stranded. In March 2019, more than 1,300 passengers were left stranded when a Viking Sky luxury cruise ship ran into engine trouble off the coast of Norway. Over 400 people had to be rescued from the boat, and 28 of them ended up in the hospital. And people die during cruises, too, and more often than you might think. There were 623 deaths on cruise ships between 2000 and 2019. You might notice that count stopped before the COVID pandemic, when cruise ships became a hotbed for COVID outbreaks. For passengers, the most common causes of death before COVID were cardiac arrests followed by suicide. But don't worry, there's a plan for when it happens. Ships are legally required to carry body bags and maintain a morgue, which is not visited during any shipboard tours. And they typically have room in those morgues for three or four bodies. Need more space than that? Well, the contingency plan is the kitchen's walk-in freezer. Yeah, stored right next to your steaks. Cruises seem to be an escape from reality, but crime happens on board too. Most reported crimes are, unfortunately, sexual assaults, but other things can happen, just like anywhere, when you put that many people into one confined space. Now listen, that's not to say that all cruises are bad. There are hundreds of thousands of people who take trips on cruise ships every year and have a great time. They come home with wonderful memories and souvenirs from faraway places. But they come home. What about those few people who don't come home? On March 24, 1998, a young woman named Amy Lynn Bradley vanished from a Royal Caribbean cruise ship while it was on its way to Curacao. So if you're thinking about a cruise for your next vacation, well, you may want to hold off on buying tickets until after you've heard her chilling story. Welcome to American Hauntings, the podcast dedicated to the history, hauntings, legends, lore, and the dark side of American history. And welcome to our latest season, Gone, which is hosted and produced by Cody Beck and written and performed by Troy Taylor. That's me. Since the start of American history, our nation has been plagued by tragic events, strange occurrences, and with mysteries that cannot be explained, just like the disappearances we've been featuring this season. For this seventh season, we have opened the files of people who have gone missing and have vanished without a trace, never to be seen again. These have been stories of heartbreak, tragedy, and despair. They've been bizarre, unexpected, and have often seemed impossible, and yet they did happen. Every one of the people who have been part of this season walked into oblivion and have never returned. Every one of their cases remains open. Each of their mysteries is unsolved. Each story ends with no real conclusion. Every one of them is simply gone. And as we near the end of the season, I think you'll find that we saved some of the most baffling tales until now, like this one, episode 19, a story about a young woman who disappeared under what should have been happy circumstances, leaving her helpless family to continue trying to discover her fate. Even now, all these years later. Amy Bradley was 23 years old in March of 1998 when she and her brother Brad agreed to join their parents, Ron and Iva, for a cruise that would take them from Puerto Rico to Aruba and then to Curacao in the Caribbean islands of the Dutch Antilles. Amy had been reluctant to go along on the trip when her parents first asked her about it. She was just about to start a new job at a computer consulting firm, and it didn't seem the best time for a getaway. After some convincing, though, she agreed, accepting the trip as a nice way to get some downtime before she started working. Amy was born in 1974 in Petersburg, Virginia, and was the oldest of Ron and Iva's two children. Her younger brother's name was Brad. Yes, he was Bradley. And the family was very close. In fact, Amy and Brad were more like best friends than siblings, doing almost everything together. Amy was described by all who knew her as friendly and outgoing, with short brown hair, green eyes, and several noticeable tattoos, like the Tasmanian devil on her shoulder, the sun on her lower back, and a tribal-style gecko lizard that curled around her pierced navel. She'd always been an athletic person and earned a degree from Longwood University in physical education. She'd attended school on a full basketball scholarship. Beyond that, she'd worked as a lifeguard for many years and was a very strong swimmer, even though she had a fear of open water, which I discovered is actually pretty common with swimmers when I started working on this story. The trip started out great, and on March 23rd, the third day into the cruise, the family rented a Jeep in Aruba and enjoyed the sights. Later that evening, they had dinner together, but Amy and Brad left the restaurant early to go back to the ship. Amy and Brad spent the evening visiting many of the bars that were located on board. There were seven of them in 1998, along with numerous restaurants, two massive pools, hot tubs, spas, fitness centers, game centers, and more. They were able to have an amazing time drinking and dancing with other passengers and even members of the ship's band, Blue Orchid. Amy spent a lot of time with the bass player, Alistair Douglas, who went by the nickname Yellow. This would be later confirmed when the authorities looked at video from that night that was filmed by a camera crew making a promotional video for the cruise line. Around 1 a.m., Amy and Brad called it a night. They returned to their family's cabin together. Brad later recalled, "The last thing I ever said to Amy was I love you before I went to sleep that night. Knowing that's the last thing I said to her has always been very comforting to me." And Brad never saw his sister again. Around 5:30 on the morning of March 24th, Amy's father, Ron, glanced out at the balcony of the cabin and saw Amy relaxing on the deck. He looked out again a half hour later, and she was gone. Ron went to his daughter's bedroom to see if Amy had gone back to sleep, but she wasn't there. Aside from cigarettes and a lighter, It didn't appear that Amy took anything with her. She hadn't even taken her shoes. Concerned, the family searched the common areas of the ship, but Amy was nowhere to be found. Becoming increasingly worried, they begged the cruise ship staff to postpone the docking at Caracal, but the request was denied. They couldn't halt the ordinary operations of the entire ship for one young woman who could be anywhere on board. The crew even refused to page Amy until the ship was in port. The gangplank was lowered, and both passengers and staff members were allowed to leave the ship. Had Amy left with them? If so, this would have been her chance to disappear. She could have left the ship on her own. After the public was alerted to her disappearance, several people came forward and, after seeing her photo, reported seeing her that morning. None of those sightings, though, were ever confirmed. But the Bradleys refused to believe she would run away. Amy had a new job, a new apartment, and a beloved dog, Daisy, back in Virginia. There was nothing in her life to suggest she was unhappy, and she was not the type of person to frighten her parents by just leaving without telling someone. But if Amy didn't leave on her own, then she must have been kidnapped. And this meant that her abductors had the same chance to leave the ship that the passengers did, unnoticed, unseen, and with Amy in their possession. The Bradleys essentially conducted their own investigation on the ship, with no help from the crew. They continued to search and speak to fellow passengers, most of whom were eager to help. Several witnesses said they'd seen Amy around 6 in the morning with bass player Alistair Douglas near the ship's dance club. One of the witnesses said that Douglas handed Amy a cup of what looked like coffee, but Douglas denied this. One passenger tracked down a cab driver who said he saw Amy off the ship. He later reported she had approached his cab that morning and said she urgently needed a phone. This sighting was also never confirmed. Meanwhile, the Bradleys were still frantically searching the ship, and the crew was remaining very unhelpful. Although they did agree to page Amy once the ship was docked, they refused to announce her disappearance or even hang photos of her on board because they didn't want to upset the other passengers. By afternoon, the captain had eventually and reluctantly ordered the ship to be officially searched, but only to a degree. He allowed only a search of the common areas, not the passenger or staff cabins. The crew suggested that Amy had fallen overboard, but even if she had, Amy was a strong swimmer and a trained lifeguard. There was no evidence she'd fallen or been pushed, but the Dutch Antilles Coast Guard offered to search the ocean near the ship. But after 4 days of searching, they found no sign of a body in the water. In the end, the local authorities believed the most likely conclusion was that she fell overboard, whether accidentally or because she jumped. While Amy's family still refused to believe that, they knew her disappearance was much more sinister than someone merely lost at sea. The ship had been very close to shore when she disappeared, and no one had seen or heard someone falling overboard. She hadn't vanished by accident. They were sure of it. The Bradleys began to suspect that some members of the staff knew more than they were saying. They believed that some of them had been giving their daughter special attention. At one point, before the ship had gotten to Aruba, Ron remembered one of the waiters asking for Amy's name, saying that he wanted to take her to a bar called Carlos and Charlie's when they docked there. When he asked Amy about it, she told him, "I wouldn't go do anything with any of those crew members. They give me the creeps." Ron didn't think much of the incident at the time, but he'd remember it later. It turned out that Carlos and Charlie's was the bar that American tourist Natalie Holloway disappeared from a few years later in 2005. And if you're not familiar with that case, look it up. You'll see why it would start to haunt the family. But the investigation into Amy's whereabouts, both the family search and the official one, went nowhere. On March 29th, the Bradleys had to return home without her, but they were nowhere close to being finished with the search. In the days, weeks, and months that followed, the Bradleys wrote to congressmen, foreign officials, and the White House. With no official help at this point, they hired private detectives, launched a website, and started a 24-hour hotline. Even with the promise of rewards for information, no worthwhile leads appeared. Even when the FBI got involved in the case, it seemed that every lead turned out to be a dead end. And then in August 1998, 5 months after she went missing, the first sighting of Amy reached the Bradley family. The first sighting wasn't all that strange, but the ones that followed would become not only much weirder, but much more frightening. The first ones to see her, if it was really Amy, of course, were Canadian tourists on vacation in Caracal. The couple, David Carmichael and his wife, were on the beach and noticed a woman who was with two men nearby. The woman reacted to hearing the Carmichaels speaking English and walked toward them. The woman appeared to be terrified, they later said. It looked as though she was about to say something, but then suddenly one of the men she was with signaled for her to walk away and gave the Carmichaels a threatening look. The women and the two men walked over to a nearby cafe, so the Carmichaels followed and grabbed a table near them on the patio deck. David later reported that the woman continued to stare at them as if trying to get their attention, but eventually the trio left. It wasn't until the Carmichaels were back home and saw a story about Amy Bradley that they became convinced she was the woman on the beach. They were even positive she had the same tattoos that Amy had. David called both the FBI and the Bradley family and worked with them to try and confirm the sighting. He even submitted to a polygraph test and passed it with flying colors. He was interviewed multiple times, trying to glean all the information out of the incident that was possible, but unfortunately, it led nowhere. No one was able to track down the woman, but it did give the Bradleys hope that at least Amy was still alive. Then just 5 months later, in January 1999, a second sighting occurred that was much more disturbing than the first. Unfortunately, though, no one would know about it until several years later. A chief petty officer in the U.S. Navy claimed that he encountered Amy at the Stellaris Hotel in Caracal. According to his story, he was sitting in the hotel bar when a woman approached him because she recognized him as an American. She told him that her name was Amy Bradley and that she was being held against her will. Would he help her? The officer later claimed that he didn't understand what she was trying to tell him. He didn't know who Amy Bradley was or that she was missing, and he brushed her off. Then two men approached the woman and demanded that she go back upstairs. The officer went back to his ship and didn't think much about the encounter. Until July 2001. That was when he saw the face of the woman who'd asked him for help on the cover of People magazine. He was stunned when he realized she'd been the missing Amy Bradley. Even so, he said nothing. He didn't call the FBI or report the sighting until a few years later when he retired from the Navy. The Stellaris Hotel was off limits to U.S. military personnel. He wasn't supposed to be in there, because it was a brothel. Rather than risk getting in trouble to help a woman in danger, he'd stayed silent until he was out of the service. He finally came forward, but by then, it was too late. As upset and disappointed as they may have been, the Bradleys refused to give up hope, which sadly provided people with the opportunity to take advantage of them. In the fall of 1999, Ron and Iva received an email with another promising lead. Or so it seemed at the time. A man named Frank Jones claimed to have information about where Amy was. He was a former member of the U.S. Special Forces, and he said that Colombian gangsters were holding Amy hostage at Caracal. He had a team of ex-Army Rangers and ex-Navy SEALs ready to go in and rescue her for a price. The Bradleys were taken in by the ruse because Frank just kept feeding them what seemed to be solid information. You see, he had an eyewitness who'd recently seen Amy in person. That witness, a cook, had noted Amy's unique tattoos and also recalled hearing Amy sing a song that her mother used to sing to her when she was little. Two of Frank's soldiers knew exactly where Amy was right now, but Frank needed money to get a team in to rescue her and get her back to the States. But the Bradleys weren't going to just blindly turn over the kind of money that Frank said he needed. They asked for proof of life, and he sent a photo. It wasn't great, but it looked like Amy. So they were in. They wired him $210,000 to bring their daughter home, $24,000 of their own money, and $186,000 from a fund set up for Amy's search by a group called Nation's Missing Children Organization. The money was sent, and Frank told the Bradleys to fly to Florida and wait for instructions. They waited at their hotel for a week before they discovered the whole thing was a fraud. One of the hired soldiers in Caracal became suspicious. He was being fed the same story by Frank and was instructed to keep up surveillance on a house where Amy was supposedly being held. The whole time he was there, though, he never saw Amy or even anyone who looked like her. Eventually, the story fell apart, and one of the soldiers called the Bradleys in Florida and exposed the scam. Frank Jones was a con artist. He had never located Amy, and the woman in the photo was an acquaintance of his, photographed with a blurry lens. Not only had he ripped off the Bradleys, but he cheated a charity for missing children. Does it get any worse than that? Anyway, Frank was arrested and eventually pled guilty to mail fraud. He was forced to pay back the money he'd scammed, but he only received a 5-year jail sentence, which didn't make up for the pain and anguish that he'd caused Amy's family. But more sightings, seemingly legitimate ones, were still to come. The case went quiet for the next several years. No new leads were coming in, and while the Bradleys tried to remain hopeful that Amy was still alive out there, they were struggling. Then in 2005, a woman named Judy Maurer was on vacation in Barbados, and while using a bathroom stall, heard two men and a woman enter the bathroom and loudly start to argue. She waited a few minutes until she was sure the two men had exited the bathroom before she came out of the stall. She found a woman at the sink who was very upset and crying. She said that her name was Amy and she was from Virginia and she needed help. Before Judy could do or say anything, the two men barged back into the bathroom and forcibly removed the young woman. Judy contacted the FBI, but she wasn't able to offer any evidence or clues that would help find the woman she'd met. She could only say that she was sure that Amy from Virginia matched the photos she'd seen of Amy Bradley. And then came the photographs. That same year, the Bradleys received an email from a member of an organization that locates sex trafficking victims on adult websites. It contained two photos of a woman who strongly resembled Amy, aside from the fact that her hair was longer and she looked older, as should be the case since nearly a decade had passed since she vanished. In the photos was a woman identified as Jax. She was wearing lingerie and posing on a bed. It had been found on a website that advertised all-inclusive erotic vacations to the Caribbean. A single package was about $3,000 and included free access to sex workers. At first, the family was unsure if the woman was Amy. She looked distressed, sad, and tormented, but when they hired an independent forensics expert to examine the photos, he told them numerous markers in the photos were a perfect match to Amy. This is subjective evidence, though, and there's no definitive proof this was Amy, but even so, it was unsettling. And it also seemed to confirm a fear that the Bradleys had had since the day Amy vanished, that she'd been taken off the cruise ship that morning and sold into the sex trade industry. Based on some of the other sightings of Amy and now these photos, they couldn't help but believe the worst. Once again, though, this unsettling clue led nowhere. In 2010, a human jawbone washed up on a beach in Aruba. Initially, it was feared that it belonged to Natalie Holloway, but a single tooth that remained on the jawbone ruled out any connection to Natalie. However, examiners were able to determine that it came from a Caucasian woman, although they never tested it against Amy's DNA or anyone else's. It's become one more missed opportunity in this tragic case. It was in 2010, 12 years after she vanished, that Amy was legally declared dead. While there is no active investigation, the Bradleys still hope that someday they'll find out what happened to their daughter. They continue to believe she didn't fall overboard that morning, she didn't jump, and she wasn't pushed. They hope she's still alive and may someday return to them. Well, if she is alive, Amy would be 49 years old at the time of this recording, which sadly is likely far longer than a sex worker under slave-like conditions would probably be kept alive. But hope does remain alive for the Bradleys. If there's even the smallest chance they can ever bring Amy home, they'll continue trying and keep praying that the mystery of her vanishing will someday be solved.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? And I don't mean like spells or incantations to trap spirits, you weirdos. I mean like a new language that could help you start communicating with more people on this plane today. Then I need to tell you about Rosetta Stone. Look, you know the brand, you know the name. They have the expertise and a 30-year legacy, which makes them more qualified than ever to help you learn a new language today. They've helped millions of people build the fluency and confidence to speak new languages. Now, this is the part where Troy would tell me that I made some kind of grammatical error, but he's not here right now, so like, I don't know, it's like speaking tongues. Rosetta Stone focuses on speaking practice for real-life scenarios to get you ready for real conversations with real people. Or maybe you can even learn how to use some different types of Ouija boards. I don't know. Either way, Rosetta Stone can help you learn faster and retain your new language better. Honestly, Rosetta Stone really would have come in handy for season 4 of New Orleans because I know we butchered some of those French names and I apologize once again. Now, you all know I have a 9-to-5 job when I'm not at the podcast factory, and Rosetta Stone actually helped me not make a total fool out of myself while I was in Brazil interviewing celebrities. Obrigado. And now I want to help you. So don't put off learning that new language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, American Hauntings podcast listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today. Rosetta Stone, how language is learned. Wait, by the way, Troy, like where do words come from? Hey, no, don't walk away. Oh, Troy, where do words
There's one thing that the American Hauntings podcast knows about, and that's mothers. We featured a lot of great mothers in a lot of our episodes. Pearl Curran, Julia Lemp, Sarah Moore, Marie Laveau, Jane Mansfield, Tamsin Donner, Delphine LaLaurie, Belle Gunness. Okay, maybe leave out those last two. But what I'm saying is that with Mother's Day coming soon, you need a truly special gift for your mom because, well, she's not Belle Gunness. So let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that literally turns your mom's life story into a book. So here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send your mom a question in her email, the same way she sends you questions about your dating life or when you plan to give her grandkids. Anyway, these can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you want to ask. She replies by either typing in the answers or by recording her own voice. Then MyLifeInABook.com compiles all her responses into a keepsake book, and they can create an audiobook that uses her voice recordings, preserving her voice and her stories forever. As anyone who doesn't have their mom around anymore can tell you, having your mother's stories about growing up, being a kid, and overcoming life's challenges will be something that you and your kids will treasure. And let's be honest, your mom has given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a very cool way to share them. Honestly, I decided to try this out for myself, and I sent it to my mom, and she's not exactly a whiz at computers, but she still found it really easy to use. My mom might have had a little more unusual childhood than a lot of mothers do, so I'm really glad to have this, and I think you'll be glad to give one to your mother, too. So check out MyLifeInABook.com and use the code HAUNTINGS at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use the code HAUNTINGS for 10% off today.
We're really cruising with this season.
I know. Well, haha. Oh, is that a...
Yep, 100%. All right, you ready?
Sure, yeah.
All right, thanks for returning for more episodes of the American Hauntings podcast, where we discuss history, hauntings, legends, lore, and the dark side of American history. This is season 7 of the podcast, which we call...
Gone.
All right, hell yeah, that's a new
How's
one.
That? Better?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That was very...
A little time to think about it.
It was very alternative rock, so you weren't...
Something.
Yeah.
Something.
I'm your co-host, Cody Beck. With me is my co-host, author, historian, crime buff, and the founder of American Hauntings, Troy Taylor.
Hey,
Troy. How are you? I would say long time no talk, but I'm not going to lie to people. We just talked to each other a couple minutes ago.
Well, let's not tell everybody that.
Just see, yeah, this house.
Too late now.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I blew the bit. Oh man. Okay. So this is coming out mid.
This would be the 10th. Everybody will be hearing this on October the 10th.
Amongst all the other episodes.
So I do have a few things to plug, believe it or not.
What you got?
Well, on the 12th. I will be at the Hoagland Theater of the Fine Arts or Arts or Hoagland. It's a Hoagland Theater in Springfield.
Okay.
They're doing a play about Edgar Allan Poe.
Ah.
And in addition to the play this is opening night on the 12th. There'll be some vendors and things there, and I'll be there as a guest, promoting my book on Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah.
So be doing a book signing and stuff, be hanging out there. So that is on the 12th.
What's the book called again?
Nevermore.
Nevermore. Yes.
Nevermore. Okay. So that is on the 12th. Then on the 15th, I will be at the Mineral Springs, but it's in the middle of the afternoon on a Sunday afternoon. I will be doing a charity event for a women's group from Missouri. They are kind of a the best way to describe it is kind of an alternative charity thing. It's like for non religious people, it's a pagan and Wiccan based group.
Oh, okay.
But they'll help out anybody that's, you know, maybe doesn't qualify for like a church charity or something.
And
it's for women.
So weird how they're accepting of everybody and the church ones. But anyway, that's beautiful.
Exactly. So, the tickets are $25 and it includes, I'm doing my American Witch presentation. For that. And it starts at 1 o'clock. And you can get information about how to get tickets, whatever's left on my website, or not my website, my Facebook page. You just go to the Troy Taylor page on Facebook. I'll have a link up there, a post. I bet it went up last week to get tickets for that event. Man, they're $25. It includes some drinks and desserts and things. So
is there a way, if you're not going to attend the event, to just donate?
There is. And that'll be up there too, as far as their main website.
Okay,
so
cool.
If people just want to get involved and you know, maybe can't attend but want to help out.
Yeah.
They do a lot of really great things. So,
hell yeah, I love that.
It's Sam's mother's charity. Mm-hmm. She's had it going for quite a while.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, and all the aunts and things. So anyway,
yeah.
I'm doing that for them on the 15th. So if you want to attend and maybe you can't make it to one of the evening dinner events, this is a perfect opportunity for you to do it.
I probably won't attend, but I will absolutely donate. I will not be matching anything, but if you're feeling bad about yourself, please send some money. I love that we get to talk about crazy stuff like this, but then also we get to help people out sometimes.
I was looking forward to it. I offered to do it. They're always in need of funds for, you know, helping out various things.
Yeah.
And so I said, hey, let's do this in October.
I love it.
And it'll be fun. Then of course on the 18th, then I think we talked about this in our last episode, I'll be in Edwardsville at the Wildy Theater, Edwardsville, Illinois, talking about the St. Louis exorcism.
Mm-hmm.
So I will be there that night. As far as I know, tickets are absolutely free. I don't know if you have to have reservations or not. So mm-hmm. you might want to check with the library, but, cause it is the Edwardsville Public Library that's putting it on. But we are, you know, it's a decent sized theater, but it's not huge. So
yeah.
We're hoping that, you know, get a good turnout for it. So you might want to check and see if you need a reservation.
But mm-hmm.
aside from that, it's shaping up to be a fun but busy October. So
yeah.
I'm actually looking forward to it.
Hell yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
No, I really am.
Before,
no,
yeah.
It's, well, I know. And usually it starts to wear me down. And
it's
so
chaos.
Tiring, but honestly, I don't know. It's really lined up pretty well this year, so I'm happy about it. So I think
that's amazing.
It's gonna be a lot of fun. So
that's awesome. I know I told you I did that Edwardsville Library event or whatever, but I've played on that outside stage multiple times too
at the Wildy Theater.
No, at the Edwardsville Library.
Oh, at Edwardsville Library.
Yeah. Right outside there. I played there multiple times with bands in high school.
Oh, you
and
mean
stuff.
Music? I thought you meant
sorry.
Kid playing, you know, like.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
just running around.
Throwing balls around.
Yeah, eating sand and stuff. Yeah. No, but yeah, I've played out there a lot of times with Charlie Baracus and other people.
It's it's a really nice library.
It really is.
I really like the library. And then they're like, well, we thought we'd move over there because we overflowed the library room. And I said,
yeah,
well,
I get it. You've been bragging about this for a long time. I didn't sell out the small room. I get it. I do want to bring up is I know pretty much everything's available on streaming, or if it's not, you can get it for like $2.99 on Amazon or whatever. But don't forget about your local libraries have stuff, movies you can just rent, you know?
Yeah,
so like if nothing else, you know, go check that out.
Because sometimes they'll have things that aren't available anymore.
Right.
Speaking of movies, and we've been trying to, you know, stay away from trying to tell people where to find stuff when we've been working on lists
because it changes.
It keeps changing. And unless you own it, you know, I honestly have started getting back into physical media again. And I got away from it completely, but I've been picking up things here and there, you know, not everything, but like I bought or pre-ordered the Talk to Me DVD the big set that comes with the hand and everything.
Oh.
I thought I gotta have that. Cool. And I just picked up the other day, I picked up a Steelbook. I don't know if you ever get any of those.
I know Steelbooks,
But they'd had all the Saw movies. And then with the new one coming out, I thought that'd be kind of fun to have. And it's a really nice collector little thing. So I was, you know, it was just kind of something kind of cool to have. And so I've been looking around more, you know, and picking up things that are not. You know, I did that, started doing that a little bit last year with remember that big folk horror box and things I got. Yep. And I thought, you know, special stuff like that, it's worth having the media, I think.
I do the same thing as far as like movies that I absolutely love. I will buy them on Blu-ray and get like the highest quality because I don't have the best TV, but I'm like, eventually I probably will. And want that.
I forget. Because we went to see Saw 10 last weekend, which was if you like the movies, it's entertaining. It was entertaining. It was completely unnecessary, but entertaining. I mean, there's no use for it. It's a
cash
prequel.
Grab. Yeah.
A prequel, sequel, whatever you want to call it. It's not 10. It's like 1.5.
I was going to say,
because it takes place between part one and part two.
Okay.
Here's my problem with it. My only problem with the movie, because it's a pretty standard Saw movie, but again, entertaining, was that, you know, they have Amanda in it who is. Mm-hmm. You know, his sidekick, whatever.
Apprentice or
right.
something.
But it's supposed to be set in like, 2004, 2005, right
something
in
like
there?
That, I guess, yeah.
Okay, but she is a 54-year-old woman and she looks, she's fine. She does a great job. She plays the part just right. But she looks too old to be that character.
If they can de-age Robert De Niro for the Irishman.
But they did. It looked did a little bit. And I think maybe that made it worse because then she didn't look quite right.
Wasn't convincing
but
enough.
Tobin Bell looked exactly the same.
Of course he does.
Because, you know, men, we age like fine wine. But
lucky.
This isn't a comment about Shawnee Smith at all, because I think they tried to make her look younger and it made it worse.
Mm-hmm.
Where she would have been fine how she was. But that weird de-aging thing
the uncanny valley part where you're like something's a little off here.
And
also they should have enough resources to be able to de-age her or whatever correctly.
I know,
you know, no matter
and
how well
they gave
she
her
plays
some
the
weird haircut too. It was bizarre. I don't know what they were thinking with that, but anyway, if you like those movies, it's worth seeing.
Oh, of course. Yeah, okay,
you know, you go to a matinee, it's cheap, you know, it's worth the time.
Good.
And, you know, I enjoyed it. You know, I think I it was good.
Did you letterbox it?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, of course. So.
Have we talked about the Book of Saw, Chris Rock thing?
Oh, Spiral?
Spiral, yeah.
Spiral from the Book of Saw. I liked that. I thought it was good.
I did not think
I would, because I thought, how am I going to take Chris Rock seriously? But I thought he was good.
He did a good job.
Yeah, I liked it. So, you know, I don't know where they're going to go with this now that they did this, because I mean, what was number like 6 was like Saw the Final Chapter, right?
We had
7. And
they
8,
lie.
And yeah,
they lie.
Yeah. And then Jigsaw, which was, I think, 8. And then, you know, I don't know. But whatever. I don't know. It was entertaining. I always kind of liked we're way off on a tangent.
I don't care.
I always kind of liked that Rube Goldberg machine thing. You know, the crazy stuff that they make, the Wile E. Coyote kind of traps.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's always the part I like the best.
Well, it's also like the thing that I love about that is like, you know how like a lot of times criminals and stuff, you'd be like, if you put forth that much effort into a legitimate job, you could be worth it. But this man could have been he's an engineering.
But he was. God was a genius and a millionaire anyway. So, you know, but that's.
He wants to rush.
Yeah. When you watch it. I mean, yeah, but when you watch it. Especially when you watch this new one, boy, I'm telling you, they really go out of their way to paint him with a sympathetic brush.
In this one. So we get some backstory and like exposition kind of.
Yeah, there's stuff about his, you know, because he's, you know, the whole thing revolves around his cancer and being treated for cancer. And I'm not giving anything away because this is in the Lionsgate blurb. But he goes into this treatment program that's supposed to be this cutting edge secret. You know, the governments have been after this guy because the drug companies don't want him to get ahead because he's curing cancer.
He has all
these people come to him, and it turns out it's a scam, and they've been working cancer patients all over the world that are wealthy and taking money from them, and they get him. And he gets taken in by it. And then, of course, a plan goes into action.
Yeah.
But the thing is, as they always point out, John never actually kills anyone.
Okay. All right. Okay.
He doesn't. They do it themselves because if they just would finish the, you know, go through the play the rest
play
of
the game. Yeah.
It will. So they lose an arm, they lose a hand or whatever. You know, I mean, not that that's good, but they wouldn't be dead.
Right.
Because he does give everyone a fair chance.
Well, I hate that though, because it's so much like, just cut off your wrist and maybe you'll bleed out. You won't.
Well,
it's like,
I know.
Hey, dude, come on.
You got it. Yeah, but at least you got a chance. If you sit there and cry and go, somebody help me, and no one, or please don't do this, he's not going to listen to you and you're going to die.
I'd also be so, like, if you didn't take put me a in this shot. Situation in the first place. No, I get it. It'll be like the purge.
I just found it funny that they needed to bring him back so badly. Although, really, the series, the ones without him do suffer.
They're
not
terrible.
Nearly as
he's
good.
He's the face of
he is. And I gotta have one of those dolls on the trike. I've got
I'm surprised
I
you
found
don't
one
already.
But it's like, do I want to spend $150 on it? I don't
know. Honestly, 150, I don't, it's I would have I would have expected more, like we've interviewed him too for Cinema Blend, and everybody just said he was the nicest guy.
That's what I've always heard too. When people meet him at like conventions and stuff, that he's nothing, obviously nothing like the character.
You know?
Which is the character again. You should watch this one at some point. If nothing else, watch it when it's at home. And they really this episode, he's very tame.
I'm only familiar with him from the Saw franchise. Was he a bigger actor before that?
He's he's more of a character actor, you know. He's sort of the male Lin Shaye. From Insidious.
Yes,
that's
yes.
kind of I would compare the two of them together, and I think they even did a movie together. But I would kind of put him in that, where he's a reliable person to go into these parts.
Somebody to do this, you can do it.
Yeah. Boom. And he's great for it, you know.
Absolutely.
And there's been lots of actors like that. I mean, there's some of my favorites, the people that when they do show up, you're like, oh, look, Bill Paxton's in this one.
Nail the role. You know? One person I think of that doesn't do a good job of this, but that I'm always excited to see is Julia Roberts' brother.
Eric?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. You know, back in the 80s, back when I was in, Eric was on his way, man. He was in everything.
No shit.
And he was a lead actor. I mean, he had a big role. And rumors. Now, the rumor is that he did something to piss her off and that she got him blacklisted.
Oh.
And so he was in nothing for a long time. And then he started coming back into stuff. But he's always now been like
the bad
pretty
guy.
Shitty movies.
Yeah.
It's usually nothing real big, but at one time you look him up on IMDb.
Yeah.
You'll see he was a lead and he was in a lot of stuff, but something happened, and you'll probably, if you Google it, I'm sure it's out there, but something happened. And when she was a powerhouse, she got him, you know, the something. I don't think they get along. I don't think I've ever seen them photographed together.
It's like after Pretty Woman or Aaron Brockovich, she was like, you know what?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know what happened, but something supposedly did.
So. There's a the podcast that I love listening to. I talk about all the time, but Doughboys, Mitch on there, he was in a movie called The Tomorrow War with Chris Pratt, and it was initially called Ghost Draft.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, straight to Amazon. But he said there's a character actor that
it was
Yeah, I love the creature work in that.
Yeah, because the movie was okay.
Yeah, the movie is okay, but the creature
Chris Pratt was kind of like my what's that girl that's on Wednesday Addams?
Oh,
what's her name?
I should know this. We write about her all the time.
Yeah, I know. I can't. Olivia, no.
People are screaming.
Olivia Rodrigo. Or something like Rodriguez, maybe.
People are screaming in their car right now because
I know. Well, because I can't stand her. I'm tired of looking at her. She's in everything, and now she's ruining the sequel to Beetlejuice. I'm tired of looking at her. Why is she in everything?
Can I tell you?
She can't even act. She's one note. She's the Michael Cera of female actors.
Okay,
plays the same person in everything, and they're one note.
Well, I have two things. First off, I think they should have called Beetlejuice.
This is our podcast.
This is our podcast.
All right. People can fast forward through it.
They should have called Beetlejuice Beetlejuice, I think.
Yeah. No kidding. Or Beetlejuiced or something.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
And then I love the meme where it's like Michael Cera and he's holding a bunch of groceries. And it's like, I like to think that Michael Cera one day accidentally showed up on set and was too awkward to tell him he wasn't actually an actor.
Yeah.
And he just like went with
exactly. That. And they just put him in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't dislike him. He is Michael Cera is pretty much, for a long time, I thought they were the same person. The Jesse guy. Yeah, Jesse Eisenberg.
Yes, I don't like Jesse Eisenberg. But I don't like either one of them.
I don't dislike either one of them. I really don't. I don't really have much of an opinion. You know,
that's a fair take.
They're so bland.
They are.
To me, that's what this girl is. I'm sorry if people like her. I apologize. I know that there are a lot of people that
you can have an opinion
that really like that Wednesday show. I'm not going to watch it. And then I was watching I'd forgotten she was in the last screen before the new screen came out, and there she was. And I thought, oh, great. Gosh. So then she's in that, and she's going to be in Beetlejuice. And it's like, God, give me a break. You know, there's just some people, it's too much.
Something about
and Chris
her
Pratt,
is resonating with people.
Chris Pratt. That was Chris Pratt. It was in everything. And it's like, can we have a break from Chris Pratt, please? Because he's got some real annoying personal things like Tom Cruise that I really don't like.
Yep.
He's
Mario.
I just don't. You know, it's like Tom Cruise. I will watch his movies. I love his movies.
Yeah.
But I don't ever want to hear him talk when it's not in a script that someone has written for him because he's an idiot.
Yes.
So, yeah. Anyway,
that's why
I don't know. We are way off here. Are we stalling because this is an awful episode?
Okay, so Troy, so we have a couple new reviews, and these are actually coming from the Podcast Addict app, which I'm not really familiar with.
Yeah,
it's kind of triggering for me, but I'm glad that people are leaving reviews anywhere that they can. Just like, hey, thanks for listening to the show, and reviews anywhere. But these are both from I Would the Great, and the first one just says awesome.
Okay,
which is sure. awesome, and the second one just says love it. So like, hey,
okay.
not constructive feedback, no mean stuff. Just like, hey, awesome and love
that's
it.
That's fine.
Like,
okay.
Hell yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Leave reviews like that all day long.
That's fine.
So thank you so much for leaving those reviews. Like we really appreciate it.
Or you can text those kind of reviews to us.
Troy.
And we'll get to that. But
okay. Yes. Okay. We'll get to that later. Okay.
We'll get to that. But
okay. So let's talk about the story. So cruise ships, in my opinion, have you ever been on a cruise?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, once. That's enough for me.
It's not my thing. Are the rooms really way as small
it just depends.
As things or
yeah, they're smaller than I think most people think.
Because they use those.
It just depends on what level
line.
You're on. But you know, but a lot of them, like, you know, they have different options. You know, you can get one with a window.
Get what you pay for.
Or one without a window, which sounds great. You know, they have ones with balconies, and it just depends on what you want to spend, you know. But I think that the indoor rooms on the indoor side of the ship where you have no windows or anything would be like, you know, in Titanic when they're down in the basement, you know, and they can't get out. I think that's probably what that rooming is like.
Sure.
It's just not for me. There's too many people all in one place with no escape.
No,
that's
fuck,
it's
yeah,
not
exactly.
for me.
I want to be able to go home. I want to do the Irish goodbye and fuck off.
Yeah,
and get
it's
out of
not.
There.
It's not for me.
I've always imagined the cruise.
But these are the things I tease people about. Everyone that going on a cruise, I like to bring all these things up. Oh, so no, I thought it'd be kind of fun to throw it in at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah,
so.
No, it's hilarious to mess people up with facts of things that have happened.
Yeah, just in case.
I've always thought of cruise ships as like sideways floating hotels, bathrooms. Like that's just it seems kind of the commercials look great, but it seems practically seems kind of miserable.
It like, just seems it just to me is all these people in one spot trapped there.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same reason that I don't need to go on a 20-year mission into space. I don't need to do that.
I would actually that because there's no people there.
Well, out in space, but they're all on the ship with you. Every time we're taking 1,200 colonists to planet Andromeda 12.
Yeah.
1,200 people. My God. You know, so I know I barely talked to five for 5 years or whatever, but still.
Right.
Thanks. I don't know. It is not for me. So
thanks,
I don't
Elon
know.
Musk. you said in 1994, 800 people died on a ship.
Yeah.
In the Baltic Sea. How many people died on the Titanic?
Like 1,500 or something like
oh,
that.
Oh, okay.
So well, it's a lot more.
But I hadn't even heard of this 800 people.
Yeah. Well, and there, you know, there were no. Yeah. Yeah. That was, yeah, that one was really bad. I remember when that happened, but it's been a while.
Yeah.
It has been a while since it happened.
I wasn't even born yet.
Yeah. No, yes, you were.
I was six. Yeah.
But yeah. So yeah. Titanic is still obviously a lot worse.
Sure.
And,
I would think 800 people would have at least had like a blip on my radar. And I had never heard
it was
this.
I think it was a foreign cruise line. It probably didn't, I mean, I'm sure it got press here, but
it wasn't America.
Yeah, so. It wasn't one of ours, I don't think. So I think that's probably what happened. But I do remember the one that crashed off the Italian coast, though. That wasn't very long ago.
Yeah.
I do remember that one. And they did find that captain guilty of manslaughter because he just was a fuck up. So,
Jesus.
I know, right?
Well, yeah, you mentioned there's 623 deaths on cruise ships between 2000 and 2019. You said they have to have a morgue on board?
Yeah, it's legally they have to have a morgue.
I would just think they toss them on the ice and just
It doesn't work that way. Well, it does if they run out of room in the morgue, then they put them in the walk-in freezer. But yeah, it's not like the old days where if you were traveling by ship and you die, they wrap you up in sheets, have a funeral, and dump you in the ocean.
Right.
They don't do it that way anymore. That went out with like Master and Commander. They don't do that anymore.
Shout out but Russell Crowe.
Yeah, they have to have a morgue, and they have to carry body bags. And as I mentioned, no civilians ever see that morgue. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, it's not part of the shipboard tour.
Do you know how it all works? Like as far as the captain must go down with the ship.
I don't think they do that anymore.
Well, but it's like they can perform marriage ceremonies and stuff. I'm just trying to figure out
in international waters.
I'm trying to figure out how it all works, and like it's not a military thing, but it's kind of a military.
It is kind of quasi military, merchant marine. You know, remember when we were talking about
those lost
Mary Celeste?
Yes,
and we were talking about the Admiralty Court in Gibraltar and stuff.
Yes,
that's still a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, international waters still does have I wouldn't call it a ruling party, but at least an overseeing government type thing where
entity.
These captains are given. Yeah, they do have ranks. I mean, what you are on the ship, like say you're the first mate, second mate, you know, whatever, those are all real ranks. I mean,
right.
Even
it's
if it's
a hierarchy,
military,
yeah.
Right. It's still a thing. And you know, there's still, you know, mutinies can still happen. You can still be, you know, found to be, you know, in rebellion or whatever, you know. So it's still a thing, but I you know, it's not military. But mm-hmm. So I guess that, you know, the captain, you know, is the top dog on the
top
ship.
Dog,
he's the one who makes the rules. So if he decides that we're not going to search for someone, they're not going to search for someone.
Yeah, this yeah, that
that's a whole. But see that we'll what happens that. Is a lot of these cruise ship companies, you will find that most of them are not like, you know, it'll say it's a Viking cruise line and it's, you know, they have them, you know, out of Norway and stuff, even though it's an American company
Delaware.
But they're but you're right. But they're usually not our country that is, you know, the country of origin for these ships because we have too many laws. You know?
Yeah.
And they can get away with things.
And you want to get insurance
countries.
Or something or
right,
get away with
right.
stuff. Yeah.
They're, but I mean, they get sued all the time because Well, don't you remember, it wasn't that long ago, there was the story that I think these people from Missouri or something, and the guy, or maybe not, but it was somewhere in the Midwest, mm-hmm. where they dropped a baby overboard by accident.
I do not remember the story.
Yeah, you should look that up. It's really interesting because the grandfather did it. I mean, was holding the baby. Oh, the baby fell overboard. He didn't do it on purpose, but... You know, but he got into all kinds of trouble, and he was dragged in courts in like the Bahamas, because that's where the ship was based out of. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's a big deal. But when you get these countries that don't want to cooperate, like, you know, I mentioned Natalie Holloway a couple of times in this mm-hmm. episode, you know, they had a hell of a time trying to get anybody do anything in Aruba, you know, because they don't have to.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, what's it? You know, it's not good for them.
Doesn't
just makes them look bad. Either way, it's a lose for them.
Right, yeah. Right.
American tourists are going missing, and if they cooperate, then they're just bringing more bad press.
Uh huh. So. Yeah. I'm curious about. I don't know how the laws and stuff work. So is it where the act happens, or is it the country of origin?
I think it varies. That I'm really not sure about.
That's
honestly.
Some technical kind of.
Yeah, I think that is kind of technical, because I think that, like, when a crime takes place, if it takes place in the territorial waters of a certain country, island, mm-hmm. whatever. In this case, you know, when we're talking about the Dutch Antilles, that's the Netherlands that owns
that. So there, that's that their jurisdiction.
So technically it's the jurisdiction of the Netherlands, you know, which is, and they're, you know, in Europe,
right?
The Dutch Antilles are down here, and they've got their own, you know, satellite government, and maybe the ship, and I don't know where the ship was based out of, but it could have been, you know, somewhere else. And so then it's a mess. And then you've got American citizens.
Right.
So FBI, mm-hmm. that's how the FBI ended up getting involved, because the FBI can't step into foreign cases
mm-hmm.
as long as they have the approval of the country. They have to get permission to do it, though. So
I would just be like, no.
Liaisons between, you know, with different countries. And so we do a
Interpol
lot of things.
Interpol and all that.
Right, right. Well, the FBI works a lot with Interpol, works in different countries. But again, always with the cooperation of that country. And if they decide not to cooperate, the FBI can't step in.
Right. And I mean, and we're going to get into this, but I don't think this happened, but assume she did fall off the boat. You probably have to figure out, like, okay, where exactly did it happen?
That's an issue too. And
because you have imaginary lines that we've drawn, and
I don't know. I mean, there's that possibility is always out there. I know her mm-hmm. family doesn't think that she did, and she probably didn't, but mm-hmm. you know, she was a great swimmer, but on the other hand, you know, that's a long fall. I mean, those things are huge.
Yeah.
So you're falling the equivalent of five or six stories.
You hit the water. It's basically concrete at some point.
You also have thousands and thousands of people on the ship, and no one saw or heard anything.
Yeah.
Which seems unlikely, too, because usually when someone goes overboard, someone sees it.
Look, hey, snitches get stitches, you know. So
let's dive into too many shady things in this story to think that it was that simple.
Let's dive into this a little bit. March 24th, 1998, Amy Lynn Bradley vanished on the Caracal. Her brother's name Bradley.
His parents seem so nice, but they must have hated him. I guess when he was born. Oh, great! You know, let's really mess up his life.
It's really sad. My dad's name was Bradley, and so I just seen like Bradley. I think even he would be like, "That's fucking dumb."
Yeah. Well, I see it all the time though.
Yeah.
I mean, I've known people. Jimmy James, you know, I've known people with that, you know, with that stuff.
Like, we just wanted to go home. We had to sign a paper. And
Tommy Thompson.
You said that she was lifeguard, but had a fear of open water, which you discovered is common. And I'm wondering, is this knowledge is pain kind of thing?
No, I don't know. I find you look it up, because that's what happened. I went down a rabbit hole on this. Apparently, mm-hmm. a lot of swimmers like that are great swimmers in pools and things don't like the ocean.
Is it because they realize like the actual intensity it would take to swim 3 miles or whatever?
Yeah, I guess. Because, I mean, you're talking about completely different conditions.
Sure.
Undertows and waves and sharks. And I mean, sharks are not common, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But undertows and big waves and things are. And maybe it just, you know, somebody's a great swimmer in a pool and you know, afraid they wouldn't be anywhere else. I don't know. I don't know how it works.
Are you are you afraid of open water, ocean stuff, or would you dive in and that stuff?
No. Oh, I gosh, a zillion times.
Really?
Been in the ocean a lot. It doesn't bother me. I've been rolled in you know, under currents and rip tides and stuff, and you just gotta, you know, swim along shore until you can get out of it.
You go sideways.
Can't get out. I mean, I've been rolled many times, ended up with a swimming suit full of sand, you know.
I was in Mexico one time, and we were in this place called Puerto Escondido, and we had a rental house, and like there was no back to it. It just went to a pool in the ocean. Yeah. And there was a house next door, and there was this guy. All he would do all day, he was a younger guy, and he would just smoke hash all day and then do gardening and dance around with no shirt. And he just like love life.
Hey,
and
whatever.
Yeah, I was like, hey, yeah. And we kept we kept seeing dolphins in the water. And so we'd go out there and like swim around and stuff. And he kept trying to tell us, he's like, he didn't speak English because we're down in Mexico, but he's like, don't do this. And eventually we learned that he's like, sharks follow the dolphins.
He was trying to look out for you guys.
He was trying to just not kill. And there were like eight to 10 foot waves that we would go out and ride in
body
and
surf.
And yes, exactly. And I'll tell you, one time I got taken under, and it was the longest 45 seconds of my life.
Oh yeah, because you don't feel like you're getting out. You just keep rolling over and over in that.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it was so much fun up until then. And then it was terrifying. And it's very humbling to be like, the earth can kill you
probably,
at any moment.
Right. That's probably, you probably put your finger on it right there. Why these swimmers who are very, you know, brave and strong in a pool, you know, are cautious about the ocean. So,
yeah, I also had a buddy that just a last story before I kind of dive into this, but a buddy that was training for the Navy SEALs. And they had an exercise, and military people, please correct me if I'm wrong, but this is what he told me. I don't know. But they tied his hands behind his back, dropped him out of a helicopter into a giant pool, and then he'd have to bob up and try to keep his head above water for like X amount of minutes.
Without his hands.
Without his hands.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. And I was like, geez.
Yeah, I know it. The stuff those guys have to do is unreal.
You got to make practice harder than the game, right? You know?
Well, yeah. I guess it depends on the conditions that you're in. You got to be prepared for anything. But man, I've only seen it in like documentaries or movies but no thanks.
I'm good. Yeah, that's why you're good. You're lucky that you're a talented writer. So their trip started out on March 23rd, which my little brother, Ricky, that's his birthday. He will never hear this because he doesn't listen to the podcast, but shout out to Rick. She spent a lot of time with the bass player, Alistair Douglas, which I just want to insert a joke here that the bass player in a band is the last person.
He was not an attractive man either. There are some clips. I've seen some of the clips online from that footage that was filmed that night.
Yeah,
that shows them like dancing, and I'm thinking she was just being kind.
Yeah,
because there's no way. Yeah,
well, that's why like no woman I ever dated in high school or college was ever
bragged about dating a bass player.
Well, they were never worried about me doing anything. So like, oh, you're the bass player. No one's gonna hit on you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know correct. What they say to a bass player who's wearing a suit, right?
Huh?
Will the defendant please rise?
Jesus Christ. Okay. The last thing her brother said was that he loved her. And I was actually talking to a buddy of mine last night, Corey, and we've been, you know, we're getting older. We're 34, 35, whatever. And we love, you know, pop punk and all this music, and this new Blink-182 song came out because they got back together.
Oh, okay.
It's called One More Time. And the whole song is pretty much like, so Mark Hoppus and Blink, he got diagnosed with cancer. Travis Barker got in a plane crash, survived. And the whole song is like, it shouldn't take a sickness or a plane falling out of the sky for us to say, hey, I love you, dude. We've just all, me and my guy friends all the time now, like, we're just like, hey, love you, bye. Like, we just do that.
Yeah, nothing
and
wrong with that, man.
And I love that. I hate it, but I love that he at least got to say that, because you hear so many
I think that's how he felt too.
You hear so many stories about like, God, the last thing I said to them was, you know, I was arguing or whatever. Father sees her at 5:30 a.m. She's gone by 6. The crew even refused to page Amy until the ship was in port. How many times have I been paged in schnooks when my mom couldn't find me?
Well, the thing about it is that, you know, that was all just, we don't want to disturb the passengers.
You know,
the whole thing was, they didn't even want to put up, like, do you know where, have you seen her today? Could you tell us? I mean, they wouldn't even let them put up flyers.
That's garbage.
Because it was, well, it's all about, you know, protecting
the optics and stuff,
image, you know, the image of everybody's there to have fun. I'll give you a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
I was in Jamaica one year and went on this cruise. It was supposed to be like this fun cocktail sunset cruise. And so when we got to the boat, you know, they're playing, you know, Bob Marley and stuff.
Yeah, of course.
Everything's cool. So then the boat leaves and then you get your, you know, watered down, half-assed bargain basement well drinks because that's what's free at your resort.
Because it's
all you can drink. Yeah. If you don't mind swill.
And you're doubling up.
And you can actually pay if you want something decent. But anyway, so the boat goes out and the whole time we're out there, the music is like somebody's, like Pandora list or something. It's not even like festive. It's just
not catered music. To like what you're doing. Yeah.
And then, so then when we're on our way back into the dock, the boat's coming back in, the Bob Marley comes back on.
Son of a bitch.
And they're trying to get everybody to dance and act like we're having fun. And we're like, yeah, fuck you, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, it's like everyone is in revolt at this point. We were so mad, you know, so it was all about the image. They wanted the people on the shore to see that it looked like we were having fun.
Right.
And that's exactly what was going on with this. We're not going to page her. We're not going to put up flyers. We're not going to tell the passengers she's missing. Because then they might freak out.
And, they might not come back next year.
And not come back next year. Right. Exactly.
That's such garbage. How hard would it be to just be like Bob Marley playlist and just keep that vibe going?
I know. Believe me, that's what we said. But
gosh. Anyway. Yeah. Let's see. A cab driver eventually says, you know, she approached him and desperately needed a phone. And she said the crew gave her the creeps. Apparently, the bar they wanted to take her to, Carlos and Charlie's, is where Natalie Holloway disappeared from. August 1998, they get their first sighting. It gets weirder. But everything you're kind of saying here, like, it just seems, is it a kidnapping, sex trafficking?
That's what I think. I think that's what her parents think, too. And I think they're probably right.
Yeah.
Because all of these sightings, even though none of them are, you know, I keep saying, because officially they're not confirmed, but these people all looked at the picture and said, that's the girl.
Yeah.
That's the girl I saw. And there's no reason not to believe that they're telling the truth.
Yeah. Well,
that they're mistaken.
Why would they lie? Yeah.
Yeah. There's no reason for them to, especially some of the things that happened, like with the woman in the bathroom stall, the couple that were at the beach and saw her and she kept trying to talk to them because they were speaking English. And, you know, she was being wrangled by these guys.
Yeah.
And then there's that scumbag Navy officer who's in the hotel, which is off limits.
He didn't understand what he was trying to tell.
Yeah, that's bullshit. He was just trying to cover his ass.
That's fucking garbage.
And didn't say anything for years. Well, way too late by then. Why even bother?
Yeah.
You know, he saw her picture on the front of People magazine. Oh, gee, I guess I should do something.
Really?
Why
honorary.
Didn't you do something before that, man? Because, she was telling him she was an American being held against her will. And he said, he's in the military officer. But instead of, you know, coming forward because he'd get in trouble because he was in an off limit spot because it was a brothel.
Yeah.
Which, again, makes me think that
it's
a sex trafficking
thing, which
totally makes sense. It really does. And especially as, you know, more and more similar sightings have come over time. If I had to honestly say, though, at this point, I'm pretty sure she's not alive anymore.
I'm not even convinced that photo, which
I know we're not to that yet, but they sent him that photo,
right?
You know, from the sex website. I'm not sure that's her. I keep looking at it, and I don't know.
They use them, abuse them, toss them. They treat them
because in 10 years. Think of probably the hell she'd been living.
Well, probably a bunch of heroin and things.
For all we know, she's dead long before that even got posted on the internet.
Yeah.
I can't hardly believe she'd still be alive.
That's so. And
because I mean, at this point, she'd be like in her late 40s. Well,
yeah,
they didn't keep her around.
Sure.
That's too old for that.
Absolutely.
It just is, you know.
Yes. So. And for people like,
and I
know,
hate to say that because
no,
you're a really nice person. Everybody loved her.
You were totally right. But I think about the way I changed from 20 to 30 is one thing. But now that I'm in my 30s, it's a drastically different thing. So you can change a lot in 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing that fucks me, well, one, she didn't have Liam Neeson as a dad.
Yeah.
Right. That's not going to happen. But also the fact that like she would find Americans or whatever and like try to kind of reach out. But think about it. If you're in America, you scream bloody murder, run out, somebody helps you and you're cool. But the fact that that didn't happen, like that's a different situation.
It is.
And she probably is. She's going to get killed if she's
in a foreign country where she maybe by, you know, 2005 spoke some of the language, but even so she's being held against her will and she's still being held against her will. And people are doing what they can. And then they try to help. They come forward. They contact her family. They do everything they're supposed to do. And nobody could still find her. I just don't know. And I do get it. We are talking about.
It's an international
almost
kind
third
of
world countries here.
Yeah.
In
the
a
rules
lot of ways.
Don't apply.
Yeah. And so it's a different kind of rules in a lot of different places to hide. And you can't just sweep in with your hired soldiers that you have that are going to come in and rescue her, like the guy that tried to screw them over. Well, did screw them over.
210.
I just steals the money from a kid from a children's charity too. That's the worst part of it.
I think he's not as bad as the sex traffickers or whatever, but he should also just be killed.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Well, he ought to
be beaten with the Navy officer, in my opinion. But
yeah, absolutely.
He's just as bad. That's a guy.
Put him in the brig.
That is a guy who could have easily just taken her out of there.
Right. He could have actually
on the spot.
Yeah.
And could have taken her out or at least made a phone call to the shore patrol or to whoever.
Anyone.
You know, any of his buddies on the base.
Even
anything,
the even
wherever
his,
they were, if they were on a ship, I don't know where they were, but
people in the underworld
could have called anybody,
could have done something.
Yeah. You know, because in, you know, I don't know, maybe he probably didn't. I don't know if he had a cell phone then. That's a little early for cell phones, but he could have picked up the damn phone and called somebody and say, hey, listen, I need you to come down here. There's an American girl here. She's in trouble. And they're like, hey, man, you're not supposed to be there. Who cares?
I'm surprised.
Nobody would have punished him if he had rescued someone who'd been missing for 6 years.
That's the noble thing to do. And I'm also surprised that, like, with these kind of people, like, wouldn't there be a reward out there? Wouldn't they be?
There was a reward.
Greedy enough to be like, you know what? Yeah. I'll fall on this side to like at least get paid. And it's something I was thinking about, especially with the guy that they sent 210K to. People talk about like, you know, karma and things come back around, all that. What I like to think about, Troy, is. And whatever you believe in, God or higher power or not or whatever, what if God sent me here to be your fucking karma?
Well, there you go. Or better yet, you know, why would your higher power allow this to happen?
Mm.
Well, he didn't allow it to happen because he kept throwing people in there to get her out. And no one got her out. I mean, so you could look at it that way, too.
Right.
Say that fate stepped in several times here. To try to help this girl, and somehow it always got screwed up.
I like to think, I mean, this is easy for me as like a straight white guy in America kind of thing, but I always think if I have the opportunity to do something, I have the responsibility to do something.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, and the fact that nobody did anything for her and
people did try. That's
sure.
You know,
and I don't want to dismiss
caught
that,
up in red tape and foreign countries and, you know,
right.
The inability of, and I'm not even blaming the FBI. Listen, I do a lot of blaming on the FBI,
right.
Because I've seen so many screw ups in the work I do, and not that they're not. I'm sure, just like there are with police, you always want to rag on the cops,
you know, bad apples.
But the majority of them are doing a good job.
They're doing the best they can with what they have.
The best they can. And it's the same way with the FBI. They're doing the best that they can with what they have to work with. But there are also a lot of screw ups that should have never have happened. Wake up.
Sure.
But lots of stuff has gone wrong. John Dillinger, you know, it's just a lot of things over the years. But
yeah, if only we had examples.
But they did the best they could. And, you know, they just got bogged down in all of this. And I just think it's too late now.
Yeah,
it's just too late.
Oh,
too much time has passed.
But also something with the people that did try to help. Like, again, it's a very weird situation. You don't exactly know how to act.
It is weird.
Yeah. But also if
it's some kind of scam.
Exactly.
See, there could have been that. But these people were brave enough to try to come forward. I mean, yes, they didn't run out and try to, you know, beat up the people who had her or anything like, you know, they're vigilantes or superheroes.
Right.
But they did try to help. So at least they did recognize the fact that
they did something.
Yeah, like the guy and his wife who, you know, met her on the beach, mm-hmm. you know, for all they knew, those two guys were and probably were armed and could have killed them on the spot.
Well that's the,
so
that's the
they did the best they could do.
The thing that's the thing I want to talk about is if you do know about these sorts of things or whatever, and you want to try like the international, you know, sex trafficking thing, these people will fucking kill you.
Oh yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You are not going to get in between them and their money and stuff. I understand.
So the best thing to do is cautious. Find a way to get help. Yeah.
Exactly.
Rather than think you're Batman.
Yeah. An adult. Yeah.
Find an adult. There you go.
Yeah. So 2010, a human jawbone washes up in Aruba. People were definitely thinking this was the Natalie Holloway thing, but it's not.
But it wasn't Natalie, but they never tested it against Amy or anybody else. So, because for whatever reason, Amy's story never got as much coverage as Natalie.
Was she not a cute blonde white girl?
No, she wasn't blonde. She wasn't blonde. Maybe that's it.
You think that?
I don't know. I think she was a little early. I don't know. I think she was before Natalie Holloway. So, you know, I don't know. It's hard to say.
Not a happy ending. We don't know what happened to her. And what happened to her was probably bad.
And, yeah. Yeah. And like I said, at the end, as of today, Amy would be 49.
Yeah.
You know, she's not alive anymore. There's no way they would have kept her around.
You said this one, though, was 12 years before they declared her.
They waited 12 years after she vanished before they legally declared her dead. And, you know, that's a paperwork thing. You know, at some point we talked about that
in a lot of episodes.
7 years is when that's when you can do it legally. Mm-hmm. If someone doesn't turn up in 7 years, you can have them declared dead. Well, her parents waited 12 because they were still hopeful that she would be found. They're still hopeful. They're still alive. I mean, it's not like they've gone anywhere. They're still out there. You can look up their website. It's all still out there. I'm sure they probably have, their hopes have dimmed considerably, but I'm sure, especially your mother is still, you know, I ran across a lot of quotes from her and things when I was working on this, and she was talking about, you know, I hope she's out there somewhere.
I mean,
you know, even if
you got to lose.
Yeah. Even if she'd been sex trafficked, every time they would get another report like that, no matter how bad that would make you feel, it gave her mother hope that at least she was still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And she's still hoping. I don't know, man.
I wonder, like, it's because I would love to think like, yeah, every time it would give me hope or whatever, but at some point, like, does it burn you out and break your brain?
Well, it becomes your entire life. That's the problem. It just takes over your entire life. People who end up in these situations, especially missing persons things, mm-hmm. that's the thing about this season that I think is the saddest thing about it, is that
no resolution, closure.
There's no resolution. There's no way to ever know what finally happened with these people, because we'll never know. You know,
what's worse, like never knowing, or just being like, okay, now we found them, I know they're fucking dead.
Yeah,
is that better or worse? Like, I don't know. God, I'm so glad we did this season. Is there anything else that you want to talk about that I did not bring up?
No, I think we're good. This is one I don't want to keep thinking about later on.
So, yeah, great. I'll be able to sleep great tonight. It'd be great. I want to give a quick shout out to our latest subscribers on Patreon. So thank you so much for supporting the show to Gina, Shannon, Crystal, Catherine, James, Denise, or D Nice, whatever.
It's Denise.
I know. Teresa and Peyton. So thank you so much for supporting the show. We're already in a little bit into October, so there's gonna be a lot. If you want American Accounting's
podcast,
be
a lot of
we're gonna be all in your
still
face.
Gonna be a couple of Patreon shows. We got a new one coming up today, as a matter of fact. Or the 10th, when everybody hears this episode, we'll have a Patreon episode out too. We are now creeping later in the middle. I'm not giving you an ending. I'm just telling you we're past the middle now.
Well, you've given me
H.H. Holmes story,
something
sinister. So,
okay. So if you do more than 11 episodes after this, I'm going to call you out on this.
No, there won't be more than 11 episodes.
Okay.
I don't know how many, but there won't be there. I just did 12. So, I don't think it'll be 24 episodes anyway. Well, I guess we'll see. Anyway, we are in the middle of Sinister, the true story of H.H. Holmes. And that is available to our Patreon subscribers only. So if you're thinking, well, you already heard this at the beginning, I'm not going to go through it all again. If you want to dig into that other podcast, you can be a supporter at patreon.com/AmericanHauntings. You will also get other discounts other than the one that we give to our podcast people. Anybody listens to the show gets a podcast discount just by using the discount code podcast.
That's podcast? It.
Just one word, podcast. When you check out, and that's at AmericanHauntings.net. You can get books, shirts, whatever. Cody's got his shirt store up at AmericanHauntingsClothing.com. You can use the same code there and it'll get you 10% off everything you order.
Just so, making money.
Yeah.
So. Well, it is now time for our Ghostwriter segment. So if you have a question or comment about the world of the macabre or missing people, email us at AmericanHauntingsPodcast@gmail.com or Troy. How else can they get a hold of
us? Well, they can also, if you've got a comment about the show or a quick question you'd like to have answered on the show, you can email Cody there or you can text us. We're going to have some fun with this, I hope.
I'm so excited.
You can text us at 217-791-7859. We will not give out your phone number on the air on the show. I guess it's not air anymore, but
that's a bad joke on the show.
Yeah. But we will, you know, read your comments and your questions on the air and have some fun with this. So we're just drop us some text, man. 217-791-7859, and we'll play around with that. So
hell yeah. And when you text that, if depending on what time of night, it actually makes all Troy's lights flash on and off too.
No, it actually won't.
It wakes up.
See it the next day. So if you do it at night. So
this email we have comes to us from Chris, and it's titled Reverend Kelly. Says, "Dear Troy and Cody, I wanted to say I really enjoy your American Hauntings podcast. I stumbled across it on Spotify one day and I'm now hooked. I really enjoyed the whole backstory on the Villisca episodes, which is season 3. Being a former librarian, I wondered what had happened to the little reverend. I did a little digging and found some information on ancestry.com that said he died in the Islip Hospital in New York on April 6, 1959. According to Find a Grave, he is buried in Woodlawn Cemetery in the Bronx. I thought you might be interested to hear where he ended up. Thanks so much for the wonderful podcast.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, because I wasn't sure where he ended up. When I had written that originally, when I'd written the book, it had been a number of years ago, and I hadn't gone back to it. But yeah, that's cool. I'm glad somebody found that. It's really cool.
That's so interesting, too, because now I'm thinking, like, I bet there are a lot of things we could elaborate on.
That's the thing that happens, and we talk about this all the time, is new information becomes available that I couldn't have gotten without going to Islip, New York, you know what I mean, to look up death records, because I had no idea where he ended up, so I didn't even know where to look. So it's very cool now that more and more things become available, and I'm glad somebody took the time to look that up.
Yeah.
But you can count on a librarian. You can always count on a librarian.
Oh, hell
so
yeah.
they know what they're doing. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Chris, also, I hope you do not spend any money to figure this shit out, but I love the information. that is really cool though. It's just nice to kind of like know, because there's so many loose ends from all our stories.
Oh, absolutely.
And, like, for somebody to kind of fill us in.
God, you imagine if we went back through everything and started for loose ends.
Oh, God. We could make a side podcast. It's American Hauntings Podcast Loose Ends. Loose Ends.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I got, dude.
All right, cool. Yeah, this is great. So, this is fun. Thanks. It's a good episode. So, at least I had a good time.
I'm having fun. Hopefully
people like it when they listen to it. Even our wild tangent on movies at the beginning. So,
skip through it.
Yeah.
Well, if you're listening at this point, then you're already mad.
They're still around. So, all right, cool. All right, we good? Let's wrap up.
Yeah, all right. Well, this episode of the American Hauntings Podcast is written by Troy Taylor and was produced and edited by me, Cody Beck. If you enjoyed the show, leave us a review on iTunes. Tell your friends, neighbors, random people on the street or that you meet in the ocean.
Send us texts.
I want to see. This could be, we could just be opening a whole shit show thing, or it could be great. I don't know.
Can of worms we really didn't want to open.
We'll live and learn. But yeah, follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast. You see the website at AmericanHauntingsPodcast.com for more info about the show, notes, photos, links, and more. And we'll put some videos on there of other stuff. And we're putting a bunch of just content out there in context. Yeah. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, or anywhere else that you waste hours every day when you're supposed to be working or studying. We promise that we're much more entertaining. We do need to change that.
I know. The promise thing is tough.
I'm such a liar.
We should probably say... We're probably more entertaining, depending on what you're doing.
Exactly. Yeah.
We should probably put in all that so that we're not. Because, I mean, somebody could probably sue us.
Yeah. I don't want to get hit with libel or something. Yeah.
Promise. You guys promised. You suck.
Yeah. It broke my heart. I was just thinking the other day, this is a tangent, but The Incredibles, the Pixar movie.
Yeah.
He saves a guy from jumping off a building. And then the guy sues him.
Right.
He goes, you didn't save my life. You ruined my death.
Yeah.
That's an amazing line. Also, this is a Pixar movie. Thanks for listening. We couldn't and definitely wouldn't. That is not a lie. Do it without you. So until next time, goodbye.
So long.
See you later. This was a fun one.
This was fun. Yeah. It shouldn't have been. It's a horrible story.
I know.
That's the only bad thing. It seems like we have the